folks, and welcome to episode 7 of the Non-Diet Yogi podcast, where we explore yoga, earth-based living, and gentle nutrition through a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Casey Conroy, non-diet dietitian, yoga teacher, and parent. And this episode is all about mothering. So this is a really off-the-cuff, unprepared episode. I just really feel like I need to talk about this issue because being a mum is fucking hard. And I just lately have felt the need to talk about this. So this will just be a solo episode, me riffing about mothering and parenting and caring for kids. So being a mum is hard, and I don't think I really realised just how hard it was. Of course I didn't, until I became a mother myself. And a mother, you know, isn't just someone who has children and is bringing up children. It can be someone who has miscarried or had an abortion or has had stillbirths or has given children up for adoption or is a carer or has adopted children. So there's lots of different forms of parenting and mothering. But my personal experience is as a woman who has been pregnant twice and had two children. And I'll just speak from my personal experience. It is really hard. I think besides the actual day-to-day business of, you know, trying to raise these little humans as best you can and trying not to fuck them up, or at least not fuck them up as much as maybe your own parents fucked you up. That's some great advice that I heard somewhere along the line. If you traumatize your children slightly less than your own parents traumatize you, then you're doing a great job. And that's really helped me to just kind of relax a bit and not try to be perfect in my parenting. But besides that, every day, day-to-day, you know, raising kids, looking after kids, being with kids, which is beautiful and amazing, but also can be very hard. The thing that I've found hardest is its impact on my relationships, and especially my friendships, but also my relationship with my partner, my kid's dad. So I'll just tell a few little stories. Before I was a mum, I have a very, very dear friend. She's such a kick-ass, amazing person. Her name's Naomi. And she had had her baby, her first child. And I just remember she was having a really hard time. And I, at the time, I was very far from even thinking of having kids. I think I was overseas when she had her child. And I just still to this day feel like I wasn't fully there for her, especially in that first year or couple of years of her mothering journey. And now when I look back at that, I just think, oh, wow, you know. Until I had my own kids, I didn't realize just how hard it can be and how hard a time she was having. And I've since talked to her about it, and she's reassured me that it's all good, you know, it's okay. But I'm just trying to start by saying I know what it's like to be, not cognizant of these issues and insensitive to people who are bringing up little people or just humans in general. So I've lost friends. I've actually found, you know, despite the saying goes, it takes a village to raise a child, but I've found that since becoming a mum, I have lost some friends. One incident that comes to mind was when my first child, Archie, was two and he was in full toddler mode, and, you know, it was a difficult time with him. My husband, Andreas, was working. I think I was working, and I was also 6 or 7 months pregnant with my second baby. And I just remember a friend who I hadn't spoken to for a couple of months confronted me, and she was in a phone conversation, I think it was, and she was really sweet and nice about it. But basically she was, confronting me about the fact that I hadn't visited her enough, in air quotes, in the past year. And this friend, she didn't have children, but she had friends with kids. And she just, you know, she had this conversation with me where she was saying, well, you know, I have friends with kids and they managed to visit me. So that's, you know, basically saying that's not really an excuse for not visiting me enough. And I just remember at the time feeling riddled with guilt. Actually, it was at a kind of hectic time. So I was 7 months pregnant with my second baby. We'd just returned from a camping trip. And I think the day after we returned in this little urban, kind of apartment block that we were living in, where there were a couple of drug dealers around. It wasn't the, you know, it was kind of low, middle, socioeconomic kind of environment we were living in. And we lived in this little apartment with no yard and all that kind of thing, a lot of open streets. And basically, my husband and I had been walking with our two-year-old to check the mailbox, and basically someone who was speeding at about four times the speed limit really nearly hit Archie, my child. And I just remember watching it in slow motion. I was too far from him to do anything, and just thinking I was about to see my child be killed in front of me. And I just remember screaming, and it was really fucking traumatic. So yeah, this had just happened, and it wasn't long after, maybe a day or two, that this friend was having this conversation with me. And so I've just found that my brain kind of exploded, and I felt really guilty at the time. I was already really rattled from what had happened, but yeah, apparently I didn't have an excuse for not having visited her enough. And it's kind of like, well, how do you explain to someone what it's like to have a kid who screams the whole time they're in a car, which is what Archie was doing at the time? And this friend lived maybe two and a half hour drive away. How do you explain to someone how painful sacroiliac joint pain is when you're pregnant for the second time? You know, you can try, but unless you've been pregnant or been a parent, you can't really understand. And of course you can't understand, you know, but I just felt so unsupported and actually just really, really guilty at the time. You know, I was crying and apologizing and, vowing to be a better friend. And it took a couple of weeks of processing, but I eventually decided, you know what, I think I'm just done with that friendship. And I don't, you know, whether that was the right decision or not, that is the decision I made. And it just really, I'm using it as an example to try to portray just how impactful being a mum can be, and how friendships can end because of that. That said, I also have friends with no kids who really, really try. They really try to get it, and they really try to be there and to understand you. And one of my other very, very good friends, Fiona, you know who you are, she was and always has been one of those people. And, you know, even times when I haven't spoken to her for ages and we finally talk or catch up again, she just seems so... She's like, you know, I get it. You're a mum. You're a mum with two kids. I get it. Like, don't feel bad. And it just makes me want to cry and kiss and cuddle her. And, yeah, having those people just, yeah, the people who just really try to get it. And then there are the people who just fucking don't get it and don't try to get it. So, yeah, friendships are something that can get a bit wobbly when you become a parent, but they could also be strengthened, I think. is one of the kind of bittersweet parts of mothering, of parenting, and that is losing some friendships. But also, you know, there are friendships to be gained as well. And that leads me to this concept of, as a mother, having to be quite strong, or at least have very, or at least strengthen your boundaries, your concepts of what is acceptable to you, whether they're friendships or situations, environments, and what just isn't. And I wrote a blog about this about a year ago called The Mother and the Warrior. And I'm just going to pull a few bits from there and read it to you. You can read the whole blog on my website. I'll provide the links in the show notes. But it starts like this. And I'm a huge fan of the movie Aliens. So for those of you who have seen Aliens, then you'll really get this. So James Cameron has directed and produced some of the best movies of all time, in my humble little opinion. The run of action movies he's directed in the 80s was really pivotal in forming the fertile ground of my childhood imagination. So think the Terminator series, Alien trilogy, and in the early 90s, Point Break, which James Cameron also directed, which is, it's just so bad that it's good, you know. Watch it, and if you haven't watched it, you got to see it. Anyway, so I've talked about how I love the movie Aliens, and I have actually got another blog on my website about aliens and intuitive eating. So I'll add the link to that as well in the show notes. But in the movie Aliens, Sigourney Weaver plays the central character Ellen Ripley, and she is a leader and a warrior. She doesn't start like that, but as the movie progresses, you really see her evolution into from this more quietly kind of spoken, kind of person into a real strong warrior woman. And there's a little clip that I put on the blog of Ellen Ripley, this character who's about to enter the alien hive in order to find and rescue her adopted daughter, just as the whole building is minutes away from exploding. And it's pure badass. But anyway, the thing I love most about the movie Aliens is that it's one of the rare movies where a female is the lead role heroine and she is not hypersexualized. I mean, Wonder Woman and Tomb Raider are okay and maybe made some small inroads in the eternal quest for, you know, gender representation in action movies. But let's be honest, who seriously fights villains in high-heeled boots whilst maintaining a deep cleavage and a full face of makeup? Like, no one, right? Practicality and believability factor, zero. So Ellen Ripley from Aliens is also a mother. And in my kind of readings and my own personal research, I have learnt quite a bit about classical Jungian male and female archetypes. And what I found is that there, you know, according to this Jungian model, there are four primary male archetypes and four primary female archetypes. The four primary male archetypes are king, warrior, magician, and lover. And there's actually a book by this title that another good friend introduced me to that is a really epic read, but I won't go into that in this blog. But then the four primary female archetypes are apparently queen, mother, wise woman, and lover. So where is the female warrior? You could probably see an obvious pairing between the male and female variations of all the other archetypes. So, you know, the king and the queen, the magician and the wise woman, male, female, the lover and the lover, they're both the same, male and female. But then there's this warrior as the primary male archetype, whereas the primary female archetype, the only one that's left, is the mother. So there's this mother-warrior kind of duality, and it just made me think, well, is there no female version of the warrior? Where's the warrior for the female? And, you know, maybe it's the Amazon, but I really did some research and tried to find, to distill it down to these four primary archetypes. And that's what I found: queen, mother, wise woman, and lover. So, you know, maybe the concept, the idea I came up with was maybe the mother is the warrior. You know, and I can absolutely relate to this, and maybe you can too. And as coming back to this Aliens movie, as Ripley so beautifully demonstrates in that movie, a woman can take on both archetypes simultaneously. In the movie, Ripley's motherly instinct is the entire reason why she's such a fucking badass. And in the final scenes, despite being scared totally shitless, it's the reason why she goes down into the guts of hell to rescue her adoptive little girl, her little adoptive daughter, from the clutches of a really terrifying monster. So, you know, when was it? 2018, I became a mum for the second time, as I've just spoken about. I fell pregnant when Archie, my firstborn, was about 17 months old. I'd only had my period back for 2 cycles, but I knew that I wanted another baby, and I'm pretty impatient. So, yeah, I just got to it. And Kyrie, you know, we're co-sleeping at the moment. Kyrie's angelic little sleeping face is the last thing I see before I go to bed every night. And it really is, it still is, the closest thing to God, whatever you conceive that to be, that I witness every single day. And so I've now spent the last 4 and a bit years mothering and looking after little people at all hours. You know, I guess I'm in a chronically... Or up until very recently, was in a chronically sleep-deprived state, unless I made or make big efforts to get a daytime nap. And I really, you know, I have had to be a lot more careful since having kids to get more rest, to make sure I eat enough, to fuel the enormous demands on my body. I'm co-sleeping with Kyrie, who's now just turned 2. I'm also still breastfeeding her. And I actually tandem breastfed Kyrie and Archie until Kyrie, the littlest, was 6 months old and Archie was nearly 3 years old. And that was a personal choice and it's not a reflection at all of what I think anyone else should do. But that's what I decided I wanted to do. And, you know, it was fine until it wasn't fine, until I was just noticing that I was getting really exhausted and Archie was starting to wake up more in the night to have a breastfeed as well as my 6-month-old. So that's when I weaned Archie, much to his dismay. He still wasn't ready to be weaned at nearly 3 years old. And yeah, Kyrie's now nearly 2. And well, no, she is 2. She's 2 and a bit. She's still breastfeeding. It doesn't look like she's going to wean herself anytime soon. And, you know, Archie is now going to kindy 2 days a week, which is a frigging amazing. It's actually opened up a bit of time for Andreas and I to get more stuff done, to do a bit of work and so on. But the rest of the time, the other 5 days of the week, he's with Andreas and Kyrie and I. We're a pretty close-knit little group. And for me, the way that I've chosen to mother, again, personal choice, has meant putting the brakes on most other big areas in my life that I value. So that includes study. It's really slowed down my progression through my naturopathy degree. I haven't travelled anywhere overseas for 5 years. We're about to actually go overseas for the first time as a family next week. So that's so exciting. But yeah, the last half decade, I have not been traveling very much at all, at least not internationally. And that's something that used to be a really big part of my life before kids. And yeah, building my business in any kind of meaningful way, it's definitely been put on the back burner. In my time with having little kids. So, you know, I know you're not meant to say it, it's not strictly PC, but becoming a mum has been the biggest career stall I've ever experienced. You know, it's a break that I probably will never be able to catch up on. And that's actually okay with me. My kids are friggin' amazing little creatures and I have no regrets, not a single regret. But that doesn't mean that there haven't been hard times. You know, the last, 4-5 years, when I was pregnant with my first, they've kind of been some of the toughest years of my life. I really love and I'm really passionate about my work and I have missed it. And at times I've felt resentful that I've had to stay at home and look after small children while my husband, you know, either goes to work or goes for a casual surf, and his life seemingly having not changed very much at all. Yeah, work to me is way easier than looking after little kids. And I just think mothers or whoever the primary carer for your children is, it takes a lot of strength. When Kyra was about 6 months old, the itch in my feet became unbearable and I did start working again a little bit. And it felt really good to be back in clinic. You know, I was doing my dietetic work, my eating disorder client work. And it was pretty amazing to be in the clinic with adult clients, having mostly adult conversations again. This is not politically correct, but I felt useful again. Beyond, in air quotes, just being a mum, which is horrible to say because just being a mum is actually massive. It's actually the most important job ever. I went back to work when she was 6 months and I was working from home, and it definitely was very far from full time. It was pretty casual part time. That's what felt right for me and my family. And it's really hard as a mum, just interjecting here, this is not in the article I wrote, but it seems like whatever you do, this is another really hard thing, whatever you do, there's these expectations on mothers. So whether you decide to be a stay-at-home mum or a working mum, either way, you're going to be criticised. So mums-to-be, whatever you choose, someone will try to bring you down because of it. And it sucks. I mean, we don't have these expectations on dads, right? Of course not. No one says to dads or like, well, if you're going to have children, then you really should stay at home with them. Otherwise, why bother having children? This is something I've actually been told by members of my family. And so, you know, no one ever says that to dads who decide to go back to work after they've had children, and yet it happens to mums all the time. And I think similarly on the other end of the spectrum, for mums who decide to or have to go back to full-time work pretty early in the piece, you know, whether they're in a country where maternity leave is almost non-existent, hello United States of America, how awful that is. We're luckier in Australia, we do have maternity leave, but it's still hard, you know, after those 9 months of maternity leave are up, it's for the case for many women is, okay, it's time to go back to work full time. And that can be really, really hard, really, really hard on mums. And working mums, you know, cop a lot of shit for that. And just in the same way that stay at home mums, you know, cop shit for, well, you know, mothering's not that hard, why aren't you at work? Which is also ridiculous. So, you know, these expectations on mothers, they're just fucked. And it really is true that it takes a village to raise a child. Up until recently, so maybe 6 months ago, my husband and I, my family, kids, lived on the Gold Coast, eastern coast of Australia, and we lived in suburbia, and we really didn't have a village. We didn't know our neighbours, despite I remember telling my neighbours a couple of days before I had a home birth with Kyrie, and just giving them a heads up, a warning that, you know, you might hear a few screams, and, you know, they were okay with that. No one called the police. But, yeah, basically most people don't have a village. And now we do live in a permaculture eco-village in the Sunshine Coast hinterland, and it's so much better than it ever has been. There are small children, there are parents, families with small children at this eco-village, and there's a common area where there's regular playgroups, and, you know, just I can catch up with parents and their kids, and it's, you know, if I'm really, really caught out and I really need someone to watch the kids, I can call someone. I have an amazing friend who lives two doors down who has been a child carer for decades, and her community service is looking after Kyrie, my youngest one, for, you know, a couple of hours one day a week, which is just, you know, like unheard of in our society right now. So we have that. We have community. We have somewhat of a village now, and it's still hard. My husband and I went to an appointment together the other day, and my dad, who is staying with us at the moment, was babysitting both kids probably for about 4 hours, which is the longest he'd ever been with both of them. And by the time we came back, he just looked so wiped out and so just annoyed and frustrated and exhausted. And he just straight up said to us, "This is why you guys fight." This is it. Just the stress of having kids and looking after kids. And was like, well, yeah, probably. Probably. So just to finish up this little solo riff, I'm just going to read a second article, pull bits out of it, that I wrote a year and a half ago. It's also on my blog. I'll provide a link for it. And it's called "I'm No Earth Mama and It's Okay." And this is in reference to my choices to partly go back to work, to work part-time, but also to be a work-at-home mum, basically. And so here we go. I wrote this when Kyra was 6 months old, and she's now nearly two. So I lasted 6 months. 6 months of being an exclusively stay-at-home mum to Archie, who's now four, and Kyrie, who's now two. 6 months of breastfeeding both kids, of spending most of my day cooking and cleaning, and of organising play dates, all in a chronically sleep-deprived state. And I recently heard, just to interject, that on average, the first year of a new mother's life, she misses out on 700 hours of sleep on average, which sounds about right. Probably about 2 hours a day that you miss out on. So yeah, 700 hours. Yeah, so sleep debt is real, everyone. There's a reason that they used it as a form of torture in prisoner camps. So yeah, 6 months at this point, I lasted of attempting to care for myself in the way that in air quotes, holistic nutritionist should, whilst managing my own feelings of inadequacy, disempowerment, and overwhelm. The same feelings experienced by so many women my age, I'm in my mid-30s, who, like me, are striving for autonomy, more rest time, and the high levels of so-called well-being that they see epitomized in a privileged few. Often, whilst mothering small children with a fraction of the support that we actually require. 6 months of spending almost all of my waking hours caring for others, with the general lack of recognition that comes with the emotional and physical labour of motherhood. 6 months of trying to be the new age, Gold Coast, attachment parent I thought I needed to be. You know, the infinitely nurturing, never say no, gluten-free cake baking, cooing at my baby all day, $300 boho dress wearing earth mama I once thought I needed to be. And I really did think that I needed to be that kind of mum. And although I swore I would soak up every second of motherhood I could this time around, and although I swore I wouldn't go back to work for at least a year, I went back after 6 months. And as politically incorrect as it may seem, I was just absolutely thrilled to be working again. I felt a lot more sane. I really missed it. I missed seeing clients. I missed study. I missed creating workshops and planning yoga classes. I missed doing that kind of good work. And I really missed it deeply in my bones. Don't get me wrong, I adore my children, but that includes all of my children, you know, creative children, as well as biological children. For me, activating the full-time motherhood and nurturing circuits really takes a toll on me physically and mentally. I really just can't be entirely happy and healthy unless I'm feeding my creative baby, my work, as well. And it wasn't until, you know, recently when I wrote this blog that I realized it's okay. It's okay to be like that. So the first time I looked into Archie, my firstborn, his little tiny newborn face, I just knew that I was already the best possible mother for this baby. And most, if not all, the doubt that I had harbored about my ability to be maternal and to mother this little baby kind of just silently slipped out the tiny crack of open window on the fifth story of the Gold Coast University Hospital where I had him. And a similar thing happened when I home birthed Kyrie early in 2018. Except by that point, I had accumulated more experience, more self-knowledge, and a deeper trust that I had arrived at the place I needed to be for myself and for my family at just the right time. I'd never really been very interested in babies, and up until my late 20s, I was actually adamant that I would just never have kids. I was just like, nah, don't get them, don't really like them, if I'm honest, just no, why would I have kids? But from the age of maybe 28, something in me clicked and I knew that I wanted to become a mother someday. And that it was like I decided, actually, I think I do want to have kids. And I conceived Archie maybe 2 months later. So, you know, mind-body connection, it's pretty strong. It's real, guys. And when my menstrual cycle came back after 15 months of breastfeeding him, I was pregnant again. By my third cycle, because as I said, I wanted to have another baby as soon as possible. So motherhood is clearly a big part of who I am, but that doesn't mean that being a mother is all I want to be. Far, far from it. I've found that motherhood has been really fulfilling beyond my wildest dreams, actually. But being a mother is only one aspect of who I am, and I've battled with that and felt guilty about wanting to go back to work and go back to studying earlier than I like to admit. And I, you know, as I said, I really wanted to do the New Age Gold Coast attachment parenting thing perfectly, but I've failed every time. You know, I've fallen short of those kind of self-imposed expectations, this pressure to be this earth mama who wants nothing more than to stay at home with her kids and only do my work on the side when they're asleep. And by the way, that's just, you know, some mamas do it, but holy shit, it's like when you're working when they're asleep, they're gaining on you. They're gaining on you and you're already so tired. And for me at least, I maybe half the time choose sleep over work when my kids are asleep. Right now, Kyrie is asleep and I've been like, okay, I could have a nap. I am pretty tired, but I also really wanted to work on this creative project, to work on my podcast and to get this message out there because I think it can really help some people. Anyway, so when I did finally go back to doing the work I was called to do, I felt so much happier. As a health practitioner and a writer, I have really strong needs for inward focus, for solitude and study. I really love to study. I'm a sucker for it. I'm onto my third degree and there's no signs of stopping. But to be truly happy and healthy, I really need a focus other than my home and family. And yeah, I finally realized that's okay. So there's this concept I came across a few years ago from Dr. Christiane Northrup, one of my favorite experts on women's holistic health. And her theory is that there are two main types of mothers, earth mothers and creative rainbow mothers. Earth mothers are the traditional mothers, the classic nurturer, in air quotes. Having babies and caring for them is the happiest and most fulfilling activity of her life. The earth mother enjoys creating a home, baking biscuits, organizing birthday parties, and generally just being available for her children at all times. This mother's focus is primarily on her kids, and she often doesn't feel the need for a career or other interests. She's happy just, you know, being a mum, and that's cool. That's perfectly okay. Creative rainbow mothers, on the other hand, are women who have an urge to meet creative needs that come from deep within them. This type of mother has to take care of these needs if she is to remain emotionally balanced and physically healthy. In women like these, their non-human creative babies, so life projects, careers, etc., need nurturing just like their biological children do. And although they love their children as much as anyone, they're just not biologically wired for motherhood to fulfill them at the deepest levels. Of course, these two mother archetypes lie on the opposite ends of a spectrum. There's lots of grey in between. But personally, I'm pretty sure I'm much closer to the creative rainbow mother on the spectrum than to the earth mother. And of course, this is a simplified concept. You know, there are earth mamas who wish they could stay at home and be with their kids indefinitely, but are forced to go back to work for financial or other reasons. And I've also met women who were midway through a degree, fell pregnant, and ended up totally shelving their career aspirations to care for children while their husbands or their partners forged ahead in their own careers. And as I've mentioned, the gap in study and experience left by those couple of years of mothering seems impossible, at least for me, for creative rainbow mothers to make up for. So I'm extremely fortunate. I'm extremely privileged that I'm able to pursue my creative endeavors part-time while still being a stay-at-home mum the other half of the time. I work from home for most of my work. I teach yoga classes within the village I live in. I teach the odd private class, but I don't have to drive far for that. And I do a lot of work online. So I'm just so privileged and fortunate. And it has taken me a long time to configure that and get to that stage, but I am privileged to be in that position. It's a delicate balance, and I never, ever feel like I've nailed it, ever. I often feel like I'm failing. I often feel like I'm drowning, but I do try, and most of the time, you know, it's good. It's good enough. And finding this work-life synergy is something nearly every new mum has to discover for herself. Or, you know, or themselves, and there is no right or wrong way to go about it. But knowing which mama polarity I lean towards has, at least for me, really helped me to make peace with my decision to go back to work, at that stage in Kairi's life. Okay, so for the last part of this recording today, I thought that I should leave you with a few of my own hard-won tips on how to nourish yourself as a mother, because mothers need to be nourished. By definition, mothers are nurturers, they are nourishers of others, and it's pretty hard to do that stuff without being nourished yourself, without filling your cup. And if we don't fill our cups, we get resentful, we get bitter, we can maybe become a little bit martyrish, and all that stuff's not great. So, you know, we need to be nourished. And as a nutritionist, I think I'm going to make this my number one tip, and that would be make sure that you're eating enough. It seems so basic, especially in an environment where everyone is seemingly so obsessed and concerned with what we're eating. Is it like high quality? Is it organic? Is it whole? Is it pure? All this kind of stuff. But I find that one of the big things that women and mothers forget to think about are the effects of under-eating. And I get it, you know, motherhood changes everything. We sacrifice our own needs to meet those of others, even though doing so makes us less able to serve others. And I've been guilty of it after having my first child, after having Archie, I reached a point where I think he was about 6 months old, and I was studying part-time at uni. I was also working. And on some days, I would not make time. I just wouldn't make time to eat a substantial breakfast until midday, after a morning of uni and like an hour and a half of commuting in the car to and from uni. And then on work days, I remember things were slightly less hectic, but I just, you know, I got into this habit of nibbling on a few nuts or an apple before going to work instead of having a proper grown-ass woman breakfast. And that shit just does not cut it, especially when you're breastfeeding, especially when you're kind of rushing around trying to do all these things. You cannot eat like that. It's just not going to end well. So, you know, there are lots of reasons, I suppose, that women, men, people, humans undereat, whether it's calories or carbohydrates or both. You know, it's not just because you might be a parent, it might be because your work is hectic, you're commuting a lot, or your study or your family commitments take up a lot of your time. Of course, there's also, you know, if you're dieting or have disordered eating patterns, whether they've been diagnosed or not, of course, this can lead to getting inadequate calories in. Or also if you're, you know, you wouldn't consider yourself that you're weight loss dieting, but you're so-called clean or paleo or low carb and you're just going too hard where, you know, you're not getting enough food. Also if you're over-exercising or you're just not eating enough to meet your activity requirements, all of these can be reasons why we can be underfed. And this is a really huge topic in and of itself, and I won't go into it in much detail in this podcast. I'll save it for another episode. But basically, there is a really big price to pay for underfeeding your body, both in the short and long term. You know, in the short term, if you're missing meals, skipping meals, or eating just like fuck all at a meal, nibbling on a few nuts or eating some scraps off your child's or your husband's plate, you know, that kind of rubbish, it's just, I'm going to be a bit harsh here, it's bullshit. And I get that there are reasons why we do it, but it's bullshit for our bodies. Our bodies just cannot handle that. And in the short term, it means that we end up running on very low blood sugars, which ramps up our fatigue, it predisposes us to low blood sugar symptoms like headaches and dizziness, and it kind of makes us just a pain in the ass to be around. And in the long term, you know, you get what hanger is, right? In the long term, it puts you at risk of a bunch of disease states. You know, undereating wreaks havoc with your hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. So it definitely has the potential to quite easily create hormone imbalances. You know, it can increase your risk of thyroid issues, which only worsens the fatigue picture. It disrupts your menstrual cycle, you know, whether that means that your cycle stops completely or it just becomes irregular or even a bit longer than usual, you know, stuff like that basically can be signs that your fertility is being reduced, and it's directly because you're not eating enough. The other tricky thing is that if you're under eating kind of chronically, this can shut you off from your body's natural hunger and fullness cues, and that makes it harder to eat intuitively and to eat enough. So, you know, one of the things I'm constantly telling my clients to do is make sure you eat enough. Looking at what they're eating, if we have to talk about calories, then we do that. But looking at what they're eating and going, are we eating enough here? I'm constantly telling people, especially women clients, to eat regular, well-balanced meals to keep their energy levels in check. So that's probably my first and biggest pointer for nourishing yourself as a mama. The second one, and this should probably be number one, but you know, is rest. Rest is huge. It's really huge. If you've ever had a baby, you'll know that rest is so, so important, and your whole life kind of has to be configured to prioritize rest. It just has to. Otherwise, you'll just fall apart, and you do fall apart a little bit, or a lot, depending on your experience. So rest is hard, especially for us kind of overachievers, but the importance of rest cannot be understated. You know, if when it comes to whether, you know, you can do laundry or you can rest, fuck the laundry, rest, especially if you're already sleep deprived, especially if, you know, you feel yourself approaching that point of just like, oh, you know, I'm barely kind of keeping it together. You need rest. And our bodies are generally pretty good at telling us that. The best form of rest for me are naps, daytime naps, which when I get them, they're just like, I feel like I'm a completely different person after even, you know, a 20 minute nap. But if that's not possible, you know, then just stopping, resting, closing your eyes for a couple of minutes or 5-10 minutes, if you can. And then, you know, just the typical self-care stuff, having a bath if you have access to one every now and then or whenever you can. Even watching Netflix for me, you know, it's not necessarily the way I'd want to chill out all the time, but sometimes there's nothing better than just numbing my brain after I've been overworked by like watching a cooking show or something like that. It just can be really, really good sometimes to just distract myself or numb out. Not as a primary coping mechanism, but, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. The third tip I have for mamas, parents, carers to look after themselves is movement. And, you know, I know that sounds really boring, but our bodies are meant to move. And this is a kind of a not too much, not too little thing. You know, it doesn't have to look like 3 or 4 structured sessions of, I don't know, HIIT and, I don't know, weight training or like gym kind of stuff every single week, regardless of how you feel, you know. Especially if you have a female body and you have a menstrual cycle, you are going to notice that there are some weeks where you're feeling like electric and other weeks where you just need more rest. You don't have as much energy, and we really need to honor that. But in general, our bodies are meant to move. So whether it's putting on some trashy 80s music or some, you know, guilt-free R&B, I like all of these things, or if you're in more of a metal mood, putting on whatever music is your thing and dancing like a weirdo in your room, in your house, even if it's just for a minute, or doing a bit of stretching, a bit of yoga, going for a little walk, riding your bike, swimming in creeks or oceans. Those are my favorite things, but whatever it is that makes you feel good, a move, form of movement that makes you feel good, that's going to get you out of the kind of logical, overstimulated domain of your head and into the more sensual domain of your body. And that, you know, allows you to feel more and think less and, you know, basically reduce stress. So, yeah, there's so many benefits to exercise. I'm not going to go into that here, but basically movement. And I shouldn't say exercise. That's a really loaded term. Joyful movement, to take a page out of intuitive eating, the concepts of intuitive eating. Joyful movement can really reduce stress and fill our cups, as long as you're not already physically depleted. If that's the case, you probably just need to rest. So just keep that in mind. The fourth thing I'll mention is actually herbal medicine. In particular, I mean, there's herbs are amazing, and I haven't yet done a full episode on herbal medicine in particular, but it's coming up. But my favorite ways to nourish myself as a mother are occasional use of adaptogens, which are a certain class of herbs that help us deal with stress of all kinds, so physical, mental, emotional, environmental stress. And I also really, really, really love herbal body oiling. I make my own infused mugwort body oils, not to be confused with essential oils. These are not essential oils. These are infused oils. I might talk about that at a later point. But mugwort, the mugwort that I use is wild harvested from where I live, both my garden and if I stumble across a patch elsewhere that feels and looks good. Yeah, I make a herbal infused body oil out of that, and I will rub it on the soles of my feet or into my temples or into my earlobes, or if I have time, I'll do a whole body herbal oil. And there's just something about body oiling that is incredibly soothing to the nervous system. Mugwort oil in particular is, I have found, incredibly powerful for downregulating my nervous system, for getting me into a more restful state. I particularly love to do it before bed, after I've had a shower and before getting into bed. I've actually got a blog about the mugwort's medicine and magic, and I'll provide the link for that in the show notes. But basically, it's overall, I think the thing I like best about body oiling is that it reconnects me to my body. You know, just the sensuality of feeling my body and applying oil and giving myself a little bit of self massage, it gets me back into my body again, out of my head, and it helps me to start to appreciate just how amazing and how beautifully my body does all these things for me. So herbal body oiling is one way to kind of say thank you to my body, and also to get to know it more intimately. So actually for the, it took me a while to think about this, but for the Patreon offering for this episode, I'm actually going to give away a 100 milliliter bottle of my handcrafted mugwort infused body oil. And at the moment I don't have many Patreons. I've got a couple and I love them very, very much. But at the moment, one of those people is going to receive a bottle of my mugwort oil. If you would like to have the chance to win that, all you need to do is sign up to my Patreon. It's at the Non-Diet Yogi Patreon page. I'll provide a link for that as well. It's the lowest level is $2 a month, $2 a month. It's $2.90 Australian a month or so. And with that, you get access to all the past episodes' resources. So I have offerings from my past guests. I've got a Yoga Nidra. I've got audio recordings. I've got PDFs. And now I'll have giveaways and coupon codes and things like that. So for this episode, I'll be giving away a bottle of my handmade mugwort oil. And so far, if you're one of the patrons, you've got a really, really high chance of winning that. So if that's something that you're interested in, as well as accessing all those other goodies, it's all accessible at the lowest tier, which is $2 US a month. That's what I'm going to give away. So one person will get to experience the magic and power of mugwort infused oil. I've got two more tips, and they're really short because they're the two that I'm probably least experienced at, but I'm working on it. So tip number 5 is self-compassion. And of course, this is huge. Thank you, Dr. Kristen Neff, for getting this important work out into the world. But remembering that if we're trying to be compassionate towards others, whether it's our children, our pets, other people, our partners, our families, and we're not compassionate towards ourselves, then it's kind of this, it's coming from an empty place. Self-compassion is something that you can read all about on the internet, particularly at Kristen Neff's website, which I believe is selfcompassion.org, but I'll double check that and put that in the links as well. Practicing self-compassion, practicing self-soothing, when we fuck up or make a mistake or say the wrong thing or hurt someone inadvertently, or, you know, that kind of stuff, and we bash ourselves up for it, those are the times where we really need to apply self-compassion. And sometimes I'll just put my hand on my heart if I feel like I've messed up or done something wrong and I'm just feeling shit about it. I'll self-soothe. I'll put my hand on my body or heart and say, you know, it's okay. It's okay. You're only human. You've got this. It's going to be all right. And just that act of self-compassion can really shift gears for me. And it has pulled me out of a shame guilt spiral before, as Brené Brown puts it. So that's self-compassion. The sixth and final tip I will mention, again, something I'm still very much green at, is asking for help. I know I suck at asking for help. You know, I can be just dying with the kids and with work to do and an absolute mess of a house. And there are friends, many friends actually, who have told me, look, just reach out, just phone me, just call me, whatever. If you're having a shit time, just at least let me know so that I can, you know, offer something, whether it's just words of comfort or I can actually just come over to your house and help you. And I'm still so bad at taking up that offer, but I'm slowly, I think, getting better. So asking for help, I know it's so hard. You know, we're conditioned to think we should be able to do all this ourselves, but of course we're fucking not. That's insane. Of course we're not meant to do all of this ourselves. I think that's all I'm going to say for today. I will provide those links that I mentioned and to the blogs if you want to read them in the show notes. There's also another article that today I actually interviewed Fiona Sutherland. She's coming up in the next podcast episode. And she mentioned this blog that I wrote a while back as well called The Sexy Successful Spiritual Woman Ideal. And that, I guess, is what got me thinking about this mothering stuff. But that's a whole other topic. but I will put the link for that up as well. And that's more about the inadequacy that we as women are made to feel, to constantly try to be better. And but anyway, I'll put a link up for that. And I just want to say to all the parents, mothers, carers out there that I send you so much compassion. I send myself compassion. It is hard. You're doing a great job. You're doing the best you can do. Sometimes it hurts when we lose friends or friendships fall apart or even relationships get really hard because, you know, you're stressed and you're tired and you're low on resources. Your cup's not full at all. In fact, it's beyond empty. I just want to say I feel you. I see you. I'm sending my love to you and that, it's hard. It's hard. I just want to validate that. Okay, everyone, that's it for my solo podcast episode for today. I would love to hear your feedback. Thank you so much for being here, everyone. Lots of love. Bye. Thank you for being here and for straddling the tricky edges of yoga land and diet culture with me. I hope this podcast encourages you to compassionately and continuously question the ways that contemporary yoga is unfolding and interacting with other big forces in the world, to develop a discerning mind and open heart, and to skillfully dodge the diet BS that often comes along with studio culture. Like you, I'm eager to keep learning and sharing, and I put all relevant links in the show notes. You can find my blog, online nutrition counseling services, and lots more at funkyforest.com.au. While you're there, make sure to download my free ebook, A Modern Yogi's BS-Free Guide to Wellbeing. It's a light-hearted, easy read with my top 6 tips on dodging diet culture crap in the yoga world, whilst creating sustainable and balanced health from the inside out. If you love the podcast, please consider supporting my work at patreon.com/non-dietyogi. There are some pretty rad rewards there, such as exclusive content, discount codes, giveaways, and the ability to chat with me. As more episodes roll out, I'll be adding even more fun bonuses, such as my non-diet yogi cookbook and mini courses. You can access most of the goodies at the lowest level, which is just $2 US a month, or around $2.90 Australian dollars. Like most mamas, I'm ridiculously busy parenting, working, studying, and all the rest. I've recorded a bunch of episodes, and some of these have required 5 separate takes just to get a whole episode done, as I need to wake up before my little ones to do it, and they get up very early. So I'm crossing my fingers that the Patreon will give me the financial capacity to keep doing this. Another way to support is to head over to iTunes and subscribe and review the podcast. That would be so awesome. Thank you. The in and outro song is Evening Glow by John Anderson. Thank you so much for being here. Until next time.